Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, hello, and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We're sponsored by Sport Lobster. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, and this is normally the point where I would tell you I am recording from a studio in London, and joining me from North America is my colleague Jeff Reinbold from Sky Sports, but I don't actually know where I am, if I'm honest. I'm on my way to a community event. The Atlanta Falcons have landed in the UK. They're holding a community event in Bushey in Hertfordshire. I am about 3 miles from the venue, and my sat-nav has died. I've pulled into the car park of a fast food restaurant that shall remain nameless. And I'm recording this podcast. So, Jeff, I'm lost.
You know what? That's a great concern to me. When one of the most squared away guys I know, and that's you, tells me that he doesn't know where he's at. So this podcast may go off the rails real fast.
You know, all I thought as I pulled into this place that shall remain nameless was, as soon as we're done with this podcast, I'm getting a cup of coffee and I'll get to the community event whenever I can. But Jeff, just on the Falcons and the Lions over the next 2 days are going to be running these Play 60, you know, flag football clinics with hundreds of school children, which as the week goes on here, we'll talk about the game, and we will run two podcasts this week. Today, we're going to look back at week 7, and then we'll check back in later in the week to give you our picks for week 8. But Jeff, aside from the big game at Wembley Stadium this week, what these players are doing in terms of reaching out to young kids is going to be huge for the NFL over the next 10, 15, 20 years.
Well, the personal contact is the biggest thing, and the chance that the players have to get with young children, you know, all over the UK and do these Play 60 events, which I think are a great NFL initiative to get kids out, get them exercising. The idea behind it is to play 60 minutes every day, and, you know, that's an issue in the United States, certainly, and it's an issue in the UK, and I know school funding for physical education and all of those things is being cut more and more every year. So to get kids out and get them involved, get them active, and let them be around these NFL players, I think is a great opportunity for not only for the children, but for the NFL players as well.
Yeah, looking forward to getting to that event if I ever find it. The last time I was in Bushey in Hertfordshire, Jeff, I was a 19-year-old going to watch. This is where the London Monarchs trained in the 1991 season. I was 19 years old. I was off to Bushey to interview the starting center for the London Monarchs, guy by the name of Doug Marrone.
It's amazing how it comes full circle, isn't it? You know, he got a big win this weekend. I know that he feels a little bit better because he's been on the hot seat in Buffalo, and there's a lot of pressure on them going into that Minnesota game. And what a great finish and a big win for Doug and his team.
Yeah, let's look at some of the games then in week 7. And maybe we'll start there, Jeff, because, you know, we've talked in the past about Kyle Orton is may have limitations as a passer, but what Kyle Orton has is a wealth of experience. Of course, we've mentioned before, he's starting for his 5th NFL team in the Buffalo Bills. He went 31 of 43, 283 yards, 2 touchdowns, but importantly, the 1 yard pass to Sammy Watkins with 1 second left to win it. That's a big stage there, isn't it?
It's a huge stage. And, you know, the thing that was impressive when you watch Orton, you know, 31 of 43, like you say, for 283, but only one interception, and he doesn't make the disaster play, the disaster throw, the turnover that kills you. And, you know, the Bills have got talent offensively. They've got a good group of receivers. Now, their running backs got depleted a little bit with injuries over the weekend, both Jackson and Spiller being out, and Spiller probably for the year. But, you know, they've got depth, and they've got a good enough offensive line that, you know, Orton has been the kind of the missing ingredient for them. And the veteran presence at quarterback certainly gives the Bills a chance.
There was some thrilling finishes. We'll go through some of the games. Let's start with some of the closer ones. And that Bills one was a thriller, 17-16. The Lions came back. They were down 17-3 against the Saints at one point. They were then down 23-10 when Shane Graham kicked a 36-yard field goal. They come back with 2 touchdown passes from Matthew Stafford. And the Lions win 24-23, which is good news for the Wembley-bound Lions, but it's a dagger in the heart again for the Saints. They're 2-4 now.
Oh, boy, I tell you what, I just feel terrible for Peyton and Rob and that bunch of with the Saints because they're a better football team than that, but they just seem to find ways to mess it up. You know, the late interception that Breeze threw gave Detroit a chance. And, you know, let's look at Detroit now. You know, this is a team that doesn't have their number one playmaker, doesn't have their rookie tight end playmaker, but yet turns to a guy who really had never been a number one, and Golden Tate delivers with a tremendous game, and Stafford is getting protected. He's making throws. He looks like he's really matured under Caldwell. And the Lions defense, which came in as statistically number one in the league, if you go by that blending that stats does, you know, at times they got singed a little bit in the back end, but kept playing and made enough plays at the end to get the, you know, offensive ball back enough to win the game. So two teams headed in really different directions, and really the Falcons and the Lions, as you look forward to the Wembley game, the Falcons, you know, struggling, and the Lions come in here on a roll and really, you know, doing a great job of keeping pace with Green Bay in the NFC North.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the good news for the Saints is that they're 2-4, but they're in a division of struggling teams at the moment. The Carolina Panthers got blown out by the Green Bay Packers. A couple of late touchdowns for Carolina, but really it was 38-3 in that one, and then they got two late touchdowns to make it 38-17. Carolina's now 3-3-1, and the Falcons, as you mentioned, Jeff, are now 2-5. They lost 29-7 to the Baltimore Ravens. They lost another offensive lineman, Peter Kons, who's been playing, was originally a guard, moved over to center, went out of that game. Then we saw Matt Ryan get sacked and lose a fumble. Then we saw him get sacked in the end zone for a safety. I mean, it's 2013 all over again for the Falcons, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, you heard Mike Smith's comments after the game, and one of the things he said was, we've got to protect our quarterback better. And, you know, Baltimore's a very good defense, and they're good up front and get after you. But think about what Atlanta is going to face in Wembley. I mean, they're facing probably, you know, arguably one of the better fronts in the National Football League with Fairley and Sue and Ziggy Ansah, and, you know, they can get after you. So that's not a recipe for success for Matt Ryan and you know, the Falcons, who look so good early in the season, you know, against Tampa, have really struggled. The defense is struggling. They can't, as you say, because of injuries on the offensive line, can't protect the quarterback. And, you know, you got to be able to protect your gunslinger. And right now the Falcons are struggling just to find healthy bodies to put out there.
What do you make of Baltimore, Jeff? They're 5-2 now. Joe Flacco continues to sort of trundle along each week and, you know, puts out decent numbers. They run the ball pretty well by committee. Your thoughts on the Ravens?
Well, you know what? The Ravens are interesting because, you know, you don't talk about them, right? They're not a glamour. They're not a sexy team. They're not a team that you're going to talk about a great deal. But the things that they can do well is they play great defense. That's a tradition there. And Elvis Dumervil and that bunch have really picked up the mantle that was left by Ray Lewis you know, and then offensively, they're a good enough mix running the football. And I think Steve Smith has really added to them. He gives them that veteran presence, that toughness, that competitiveness at wideout that Anquan Boldin gave them the last time they were, you know, in the Super Bowl. So I think the Ravens are a little bit better than maybe we thought coming into the season. And they've got the prescription, or they've got the formula, if you will, which is play defense, run the ball, as you said, by committee, get the ball to Steve Smith, and Flacco, you know, Flacco can stay out of bad plays, then they've got a chance.
I think the result of the night, Jeff, there were lots of good games around the NFL in week 7, but the St. Louis Rams 28, the Seattle Seahawks 26. Shocking game for a number of reasons, and I'll just give out some of the stats. I mean, the Seahawks had won 16 of the last 18 games against the Rams, so they had that dominance over Jeff Fisher's men. The Seahawks hadn't lost back-to-back games since week 7 and 8 of 2012, so seeing them knocked off in consecutive weeks is surprising. And the Rams, who came into this game with just one, I mean, it's funny how all these things work out in the NFL. We make big things of them. They had one sack coming into the game in, what was that? So that was their first 5 games. They had one sack. And then they get 3 last night. I think they actually had 3 in the first half. But Jeff, you've managed many positions over your 30 plus years in college football and professional football, but I know you've coached a lot of special teams. There were some huge special teams plays for the Rams in this game as well.
Oh, gigantic. And, you know, again, they've got their back up against the end zone, and they have the courage to run up, you know, to run a fake punt, and Hecker throws a strike and they get a big first down. And the thing, even though that wasn't a touchdown play, it was, you know, I don't know, probably 15 or 18 yard gain. Mm. But the thing that that does for your football team is it the huge momentum swing that occurs, and then the confidence that the team begins to feel because they know that the head coach is not playing not to lose, he's playing to win. And that's kind of Jeff's personality, and that's kind of what, you know, you if you watch Jeff's career over time, he's not afraid to take what some people would consider chances. He thinks they're calculated risks, but that was a huge play. And then the fumble recovery at the end of the game was a huge play. But let's talk about somebody else. That there's a young quarterback there, Austin Davis, out there, goes 18 for 21, 152 yards, throws two touchdowns, no interceptions, right? And you know, here's a guy that was cut in training camp. I mean, he was cut before and hung around. And you know, he's not fancy, and he's not, you know, like you say, a big name or any of a lot of things he's probably not. But we competed against him when he was at Southern Mississippi and I was at SMU. And I'll tell you what he does do is he competes extremely hard, and he's tough, and he's got enough mobility to keep plays alive with his feet. But he's done a great job under Schottenheimer and that bunch on offense of you know, mitigating his liabilities and giving his team a chance to win. And that's what every quarterback needs to be able to do.
Yeah, I thought it was incredible, Jeff, the call that Jeff Fisher made, because they're winning 28-26. They're backed up on their own end, as you say. It's a chip shot field goal straight away for Steven Hauschka, and you call the fake punt. And it took me straight back to what we talked about last week, whether you play to win or you play not to lose. And you're right, Jeff Fisher absolutely played to win. But we did talk about this in the Sky Sports studios last night. Not every coach is secure enough to do that, are they? I mean, Jeff
well, that's
has
boy, that's really you guys are exactly right when you said that, because you have to be really comfortable in your own skin to be able to do that. And you know, Jeff Fisher's been to a Super Bowl. He's has a long, long, long career of success. And you know, the thing that he does do is he is going to be aggressive. That's been his nature. As a defensive back in the National Football League out of USC, that's what he was as a player. Not particularly the most talented guy on the field, but you know, was a member of those Bears, great Bears teams and great Bears defenses under Buddy Ryan, and was known for his aggressive play. Well, he's carried that over into his coaching, and you know, I think that, like I say, I think that really lifts your team. And you know, to play in the National Football League, where the easy thing is to punt the ball in that situation, put it on your defense, and if your defense, you know, can't get it done, then you know, you can at least say, well, we did it by the book. Heck, you know, you're going to beat up if you're an under-talented team, you've got to do those kinds of things to beat a better team. I don't care if you're on the road or home, but you really need to do those kinds of things to create a huge win, which this was for St. Louis, certainly.
And they did it with a Stedman Bailey 88-yard punt return touchdown. I'm not sure if you saw this one, Jeff, but they set up the return as if it was going down the left sideline. All the blockers went over to the left. Tavon Austin was over there, faked, pretending to catch the punt. And the only guy who must have been screaming his head off for the Seahawks was John Ryan, the punter, who was probably telling all his cover guys, I kicked it the other side of the field. He'd kicked it down the other sideline. Stedman Bailey receives it, runs untouched down the right sideline, 88 yards for a score. So, you know, that was again, not necessarily stealing a possession, but the Rams had to do something different to find the
end. That's coaching. And you know what? That's coaching. And you know, you say at this level, at the pro football level, you know, there's a kind of an axiom that we all go by that, you know, you're not going to out-coach another team. Really, it's about talent and execution. Well, in this case, I really do believe that the St. Louis coaches out-coached Seattle's coaches. They had a scheme. They had a couple gimmick plays that they knew they had in their back pocket, and they weren't afraid to pull them out when the time came, and Seattle wasn't prepared for it, and it cost them the football game.
What do you think leads to a call like that, Jeff? And first of all, I had two questions on this, and I wished I was sitting next to you in the studios yesterday because I would have been picking your brains. First of all, does the punt coverage team for Seattle, are they almost influenced by the way the blocking is set up, or should they be finding the football in the air? And number two, had the Rams seen something on film which made them think that Seattle didn't find the football in the air and that they could get away with this?
Yeah, you know, every week as you break down the special teams, you know, you look for little things that can create as Frank Gans used to say, small wins, slight edges. And, you know, you watch how a cover team covers. What are they do they pay strict attention to where the returner is? Do they pay attention? Do they peek and look for the ball as it comes down the field? Who sets the width of the field? Who has what we call, excuse me, 22 man rule, which is you're the widest player on the field on all punts. And you know, that keeps things from like the play that you're talking about, where you deke the coverage to one side or you run a reverse or whatever. So all those things, if you're not disciplined on your coverage lanes, then you set yourselves up for these things. We had a perfect case in point over the weekend. We're playing Ottawa in here in the CFL, and we had seen that sometimes when they come on the field in the transition between offense and defense, they would lose guys coming off the field. And so we ran a play through, left one guy short, ran all the punt team on the field as the offense came off the field, and stopped the receiver right outside the numbers and snapped the ball to the punter and threw it to our receiver who was uncovered, and we had a 24-yard gain that gave us a big momentum first down. And those are the kinds of things that you look for during that film study all week. They wonder why coaches are in at 5 o'clock in the morning and stay until 10 o'clock at night, because you're watching every stitch of film you can, trying to find, as Frank used to say, slight edges, small wins that can create, an upset for you.
Yeah, those slight edges and small wins resulted in a big win for the St. Louis Rams, 28-26 over Seattle. Another big win was the Indianapolis Colts, 27-0 against the Cincinnati Bengals. 506 total yards for the Colts. Andrew Luck over 300 for the fifth game in a row. Andy Dalton and the Bengals just 135 total yards, 1 of 13 on third down. We were asked a question via email in the Sky Studios last night, which was, is Andy Dalton the man to lead the Bengals to the Super Bowl? And I had to say, based on what I was watching and based on recent playoff performance, no. But, I mean, I know he's missing AJ Green. I know Marvin Jones is out. I know Tyler Eifert is out. But, boy, oh, boy, the Bengals were bad.
Yeah, you know what, and this is it's funny with him. When he has a bad one, it's a bad one. And 18 for 38 for 126. But let's give some credit where credit's due, and that's the Colts defense. And we never talk about the Colts defense because when you talk about the Colts, it all starts and rightly so with Andrew Luck. But I think the Colts defense, to have an opportunity, again, these are all professional players, and yes, they've got some guys out in Cincinnati, but they're all making pro NFL paychecks, and anybody that plays in the National Football League is good enough to beat you. And they went out and they played an outstanding game, and shut somebody out is very, very difficult to do in today's NFL. So in my opinion, all the credit needs to go to the Colts defense.
Yeah, they've been statistically excellent on third downs over the past couple of weeks. I mean, now we're talking last five games, 20 sacks for the Indianapolis Colts. And I was pleased to see, again, it's no fluke. It's about the third game he stepped up big for them. Bjorn Werner is making plays. Yes. German outside linebacker, which is great.
Yes, he is. He's kind of find his stride now. And his, in that scheme, that kind of hybrid 3-4 scheme, he's a factor. And, let's look at when you look at this win, if you're a Colts fan, the other thing you got to feel good about is, the way they were able to run the football. Richardson has 14 for 77. Ahmad Bradshaw comes in and he gives them a lift, 10 for 52. And Heron has 5 for 37. So they ran the football well. And, we know Luck can throw it. We know he can make plays. And we know they've got a great receiving core with Hilton and Fleener and all those guys. But the fact that they're now starting to get some production out of the run game – And that I think bodes well for the future for the Colts down the stretch.
Absolutely. Miami beat Chicago 27-14. Bears dropped to 0-3 at home this season. Mark Trestman called it an unacceptable performance. Let's have a look at some of the other early games. Jacksonville got their first win. Pleased for Jacksonville. And it was ironic, Jeff. We've talked about the bright spark that is Blake Bortles. He throws 3 interceptions, has probably his worst game, but they get the win. And I think this one's on the defense.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm really happy for these guys because, you know, Gus has done such a phenomenal job of trying to build a culture there. And, you know, he came into a situation where they're really, really under-talented. And, you know, the organization's working, you know, day and night trying to get it done. And you saw I don't know if you saw the scenes from the locker room after the game, but that was pure joy on that guy's face and in those players' faces. And I'm happy for him. I think this is, you know, a step. It's certainly not remember, it's the Browns now they beat. It wasn't,
right.
You know, it wasn't the, you know, San Francisco or Arizona or Denver, mm-hmm. any of the elite teams, but it's a win. And that's, you know, that's something they can build on. And the fact that you were able to overcome your rookie quarterback's 3 mistakes was, again, I think credit to their, you know, character and their resiliency.
Yeah, they had 185 yards rushing. They had 3 sacks on defense. They held the Browns to just 2 field goals. No points for Cleveland in the second half of the game. Cleveland had scored 21 points per game every game this season until last night. And maybe, you know, you see this, Jeff, don't we, with teams that are making a move, and the Browns have been making a move. There's, you know, there's a step forward and then there's a couple back and then there's another couple of steps forward. This is, you know, the Browns weren't about to go on a 10-game tear and win the Super Bowl. So maybe this kind of setback for them should have been expected at some point.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, there are a couple things that jump out at you when you look at this one, the fact that Hoyer was 16 for 41 for 215 and an interception, no touchdowns. And then they just didn't run the ball. And that's been kind of their thing. Play defense, run the ball. Hoyer, make enough plays for you on be efficient as a quarterback. And you didn't get any of those things done. You know, they just really struggled against what has been, you know, kind of a, not porous, I think that's too strong a word, but, you know, that the back end has not been Jacksonville's strength on defense. Right. And you know, for those guys to go out and hold Hoyer to 16 for 41, that's an outstanding day, less than 50% completion percentage against you.
Washington on to their third quarterback of the year. Colt McCoy comes off the bench to replace the ineffective Kirk Cousins. He goes 11 of 12, 128 yards and a touchdown. Redskins beat Tennessee 19-17. In the late games, or the late afternoon games, Kansas City went and did to San Diego what San Diego have been doing to everyone else. The Chargers have been running the ball well. They've been controlling the clock. I don't have the final time of possession numbers in front of me, but at one point in that game, it was about 34 minutes for the Chiefs to about 11 for the Chargers. I think that was going into the fourth quarter there, and they win 23-20. Impressive win for the Chiefs.
Yeah, it was. And again, when you look at it, you say the Chiefs, you know, Alex Smith has a great day, 19 to 28, 221, no interceptions. Again, critical. Jamal Charles, you know, he looked good, 95 yards rushing. And they played a what you would consider a great team football game. You know, there's nobody that really jumps out at you. You know, Bo had 84 yards on 5 receptions, but it was just really a team win. Solid defense, run the football, don't turn it over. You know, kind of the old NFL prescription, if you will, for winning. You know, I think that's what Kansas City is going to need to do if they're going to threaten in that division. Now, San Diego, on the other hand, you know, they've got to bounce back quick because they've got a big, big, big game coming up this week. And you know, at 5-2, and they still have a chance in that division to make some noise. So, you know, I think this is a little bit of a wake-up call for San Diego.
Yeah, San Diego play Denver on Thursday night. Actually, Jeff, just on that case, just in case we check back in with each other on Friday, I don't know what our schedule is going to be yet. Should we make our picks for that San Diego-Denver game, just so we got that one in the bag? I'm going to go Denver.
I'm going to go Denver, too, and I just think when you watched them last night, oh, my gracious, are they something on offense? And, you know, I think that, you know, you watch them and you see DeMarcus Ware has really helped them defensively, given you know, Vaughn Miller, kind of a guy on the other side that can take some of the pressure off of him as a pass rusher. And defensively, you know, I don't think they're an elite defensive team yet, but I do think they're a good defensive football team. And man, oh man, do they have weapons on offense.
They certainly do. I haven't seen any of that game yet, but it was, I think it's one of those that makes you sit up and say, wow, because it was the 49ers. You know, the 49ers are no mugs, and they lose 42-17. Historic night for Peyton Manning. Four touchdown passes gives him 510 for his career. The all-time record was 508 by Brett Favre. So there's the record for Peyton Manning. First of many he's already got, and many alone by the time he's done, Jeff.
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right, Neil. You got to look at who they did that against. Now, you can say that you know, San Francisco didn't have, you know, three of their top linebackers were out, and you know, and that's true. Those are all true points. But that's a proud defensive football team, and Vic Fangio, and you know, that's a great defensive coaching staff. And I won't say the Broncos made it look easy, because it's never easy when you're competing at this level. But they looked in control the entire game, and you know, really, really got after what was has been historically and in recent history one of the better defenses in the National Football League.
Mm. The Arizona Cardinals beat the Oakland Raiders 24-13. A couple of things on this, just and then we'll move on to one more game I want to talk about. So Arizona have moved to 5-1, very, very quietly, getting the job done. The Raiders have dropped to 0-6. That's their worst start since 1962. One other game to talk about, Jeff. The New York Giants 21, Dallas Cowboys 31. This was tied up at the half, but I actually said on Sky last night, I felt Dallas made a couple of errors early on. They allowed the Giants to convert on 4th-and-1 due to a penalty in the defensive backfield. Dez Bryant slipped over, just a fluky play, and Prince Amukamara makes the interception. I think otherwise Dallas would have been leading in the first half, but they did pull away in the second half. And hands up if you thought the Dallas Cowboys would be 6-1, and my hands are firmly down right now.
No, I'd be sitting on mine right now. You know, credit Jason Garrett, credit, you know, his coaching staff and, you know, all of the things that they've had to endure in their time together there. And it's good to see him succeed. You know, interesting how they're doing it. They've got three war daddies on offense that they ride. Romo obviously is the key, because he can distribute the football. Dez is each year that you watch him play, each game that you watch him play, actually now, he shows more and more maturity, more and more ability to be that, you know, impact guy outside that they've needed. And you know, Witten and the other weapons around him make that passing game go. But, you know, Murray is the one that I think has really been the difference maker here for Dallas, because nobody, and I'm talking nobody, in the history of the National Football League has had a faster 7-game start than he has running the football. And you're a stats guy, and I saw this one this morning that, you know, if he can average 134 yards a game over the, you know, over the rest of the season, then he's going to break the all-time single-season rushing record. And I saw Eric Dickerson said last week they ought to hand it to him 40 times a game. So I don't know if he can hold up to that pounding, but that offensive line is playing at an extremely high level, and he's a back that can, you know, make plays for you. And that creates an awful lot of pressure on the other defense, because you can't make them one-dimensional. They can beat you different ways.
Yeah, I think he twisted his ankle a bit yesterday, but he came straight. They taped it up, and he was straight back in. That durability has always been the concern, but here we are now. They're one game shy of halfway through the season, and I spoke to DeMarco last week for an interview for the Game Day magazine. He did say he feels fresh, he feels great. You know, he wasn't about to be concerned with the workload, and I think he's enjoying the fact that he is in the spotlight, and he is considered the man. I think he's relishing that. Jeff, just a little bit for people who are, you know, maybe young receivers who are playing the game, starting out playing the game. I think they should watch Dez Bryant all they can, because I watched Dez last night, and this sounds a bit obvious because he's a wide receiver, but everything he catches is with his hands. And I'll give you an example of where it might have been easy for him not to do that. Late in the game, he's the press coverage, pretty good coverage from Prince Amukamara, who's had a good season for the Giants, had a good game last night. Dez gets off that coverage and runs a little slant across the middle, and the ball is sort of low and away where probably only Dez can get it. And some receivers might have clutched that against their chest. It was a tough catch. And you watch Dez Bryant, everything is with the hands, whether he's high-pointing balls, whether he's catching jump balls down the sidelines, whether he's catching slants under pressure. I mean, tell us the importance of that as a receiver.
Well, that's a great point, Neil. And I'll go back to my time at SMU coaching receivers, and I was blessed to have, three guys that are now making their money in the National Football League. Al Robinson, who plays for the Redskins, Cole Beasley, who's one of Dez's teammates with the Cowboys, and Emmanuel Sanders, who you saw yesterday with Denver. And one of the things that we were adamant about in practice was even if you dropped the football in practice, you wanted to practice proper what we call hand selection, which is catching the ball in your hands with your hands always back to the quarterback as you catch the ball. And I think young receivers out there and young receiver coaches out there really need to, push your young athletes to catch the ball in your hands. Catch the ball properly in your fingertips. Give with the ball. Lock it away once you catch it. And in practice, that's why they call it practice. I mean, I'm gonna channel my Allen Iverson here and go practice. Well, that's really what it is. It's called practice. It's how you get better, and you don't get better by practicing poor fundamentals. You have to catch the ball in your hands and do it over and over and over and over again, because two of those guys, both Robinson and Sanders, were not natural catchers when they came and had to learn to use good hand selection and catch the football in their hands.
And how do they learn that, Jeff? Is it on the jugs machine, or is it purely repetition?
It's just catching every single ball you can get your hands on. And I don't care if it's your mother throwing it to you, your girlfriend throwing it to you, your best buddy, the quarterback, some fat offensive lineman. It really doesn't matter. Just catch the football. You can't. There's no substitute for the repetitions. And, we had an axiom that it takes a million repetitions to create a habit. And so, when you function, like, for example, Cole Beasley, he could be just get out of bed in the morning. You could throw, as he's coming to the coffee, get his coffee off the breakfast table, you throw a ball to him, and I guarantee he'd catch it in his hands. That's just what he does. And that takes practice and time and time and time and repetition. And, that's the only way that I know to become great, is to put the time in.
And that is important, isn't it? And maybe that's why this practice is done over and over again, because it would be easy for Dez Bryant on a big third down late in the game when they're trying to salt the game away and win against the division rival to just revert to whatever might be, maybe bad habits slipping. I mean, maybe catching it with your hands is easiest. Maybe it's not. I mean, but the bad habits might fall in unless you've ingrained it into your being, if anything. It's become a part of you. That's just what you do. You do it the right way.
Absolutely. And I don't care who you're talking about. The one thing, when you consider the great, great ones, and whether that's a quarterback, a receiver, an offensive lineman, or whatever, they invest the time in their career, in their game, in their skill set, developing their skill set. And it was interesting listening to John Fox talk last night about Peyton Manning. And the one thing that he talked about with Peyton Manning is the incredible amount of time that he spends, even as a 16-year veteran, at his fundamentals, the throwing the football, his footwork, all of those little things. And that's a great lesson for young players out there, because there's a tendency to focus too much on the big picture and not particularly in practice really spend time with the details and the fundamentals of the game. Because your fundamentals are what carry you in the heat of combat.
Jeff, I almost forgot to ask you about this. I was just about to wrap up the podcast, because that's all the games from this past week, week seven. But I've got to ask you, massive news late last week in the NFL. Percy Harvin traded away from the Seattle Seahawks. He's now a member of the New York Jets. Looks like it was attitude issues, and not the first time we've seen stuff like that come up with Percy Harvin, of course, traded from Minnesota to Seattle. First of all, it must be frustrating as a coach to see a talented player like that not able to stick in a a place like Seattle. But also Seattle must have been really fed up with him because we do know he can be a game-breaking talent.
Well, when you have a guy like this that has, you know, problems, challenges, ability, you know, he's a tremendous, tremendous football player. Was when he came out of the University of Florida as a first-round draft choice. Was in Minnesota when they could get him on the field. Has shown it in Seattle. And, you know, really they thought that what has to be frustrating for them is they leave a guy, let a guy like Golden Tate go and in free agency and, you know, anticipate that Harvin is going to, you know, take an expanded role and really become a big part of the offense. And for whatever reason, here we are, you know, in the middle point of the season, and they're letting him go. You know, obviously for the Jets, it's huge for them because it gives them another weapon and they need desperately playmakers on offense. But it does say an awful lot about, you know, his inability to, whether it's get along in the locker room or all the different things that you hear. I guess we really never will know the true story, but you don't let a talented guy go like that unless there are some issues. And I think Seattle just got to the point Minnesota did where his talent and his potential couldn't outweigh the negatives that he brought to the football team. And, you know, for him, it's a fresh start in New York. And hopefully, you know, I say this all the time with these kind of guys, hopefully he's learned from it. But historically, guys like this don't learn from it. And eventually they'll wear out their welcome and they won't be playing anymore.
Yeah, we are speculating, but we're not in that locker room. But it's mid-season. They're in need of receivers and playmakers. So it must have been pretty bad, or, you know, the welcome must have been well and truly worn out. Jeff, not speaking specifically about Harvin, but what is it like if you have a real distraction in the locker room, a real problem child in the locker room? And sometimes does it become, well, okay, well, yeah, that talent on Sundays just isn't worth it?
Well, that's what it eventually, and you know, it's what it comes down to, because your talent only buys you time. And if your attitude and the other factors become bigger negatives than the talent is a positive, eventually the team's just going to wear down and say, we got to get this guy out of here because he's killing us. And again, I don't know the facts in this situation. I, you know, obviously I've read what's been reported about, you know, locker room dust ups and, you know, inability to get along with his teammates and all those things. You know, that's got to be a really difficult thing for a guy like Pete Carroll, who's a guy who seems to find the positive in every person and every situation. And certainly, you know, they got a Super Bowl ring partly because of him. You remember the huge return he had to open the second half of the game last year. And but, you know, it's unfortunate again that the Seahawks have lost a playmaker and lost a weapon on offense. But, you know, who knows? Sometimes subtraction, you know, is addition. When you subtract a problem and, you know, you hear teammates describe him as a cancer, that's a pretty strong, you know, indictment of his character to have guys say that. And you know, the Seahawks may be better for him not being there, even though he is tremendously talented.
Certainly is. Big news last week, Percy Harvin, now a member of the New York Jets, no longer with the Super Bowl champion Seahawks. Jeff, we're out of time, but we will check back in with our picks and our thoughts on week 8 in the NFL a bit later in the week. So keep an eye out for that. And we'll also answer some of the listener questions in the mailbag at that time as well. Jeff, if some of our listeners, when they download this later on, are driving around Hertfordshire and they see me still driving around in circles this afternoon, do you think they'll come to my help?
What do you have? Are you driving the Maserati today, or do you have the Bentley?
It's so sad I can't even say. It's the it's the tiny little run around to the station one that you don't mind putting miles on, put it that way. It's nothing glamorous.
Hey, make sure your driver gets you to where you need to be on time.
My driver. Okay. There's lots of chocolate bars, old Coke cans. I mean, it looks like a sort of traveling dustbin, but hopefully it's going to get me there anyway.
Hey, you know what? I hope you're going to have a great week. I'm certainly, you know, for everybody that the Falcon people and the Falcon fans and the Lion fans, it's kind of a dream come true to have your team over there playing. And, you know, certainly for all the NFL fans, another game in Wembley and another opportunity to enjoy the everything that makes the NFL what it is, the hype leading up to the game. Are you guys going to be on Regent Street again? Or I heard there was a different destination.
It is, yeah. I mean, and you're right. I mean, I'm joking about being lost. It's an absolute privilege to do this. These weeks are the sort of ones that make you pinch yourself and feel so lucky to do what we're able to do. So it is going to be a special week again to be around. To be around the players. I'm going to interview Julio Jones on Wednesday at the Falcons practice. I'm going to do a few interviews today. On the day before the game this year, we're packing out Trafalgar Square again. So there'll be 50,000 NFL fans in Trafalgar Square for a big fan rally on the Saturday before the game from 12 noon until 4 o'clock. The entire Falcons team's going to be there. Julio Jones, all of those big stars, Matthew Stafford, Reggie Bush, Ndamukong Suh, Calvin Johnson for the Lions. And then I'm hosting an event outside Wembley Stadium on the Sunday morning called NFL Sunday Brunch, which begins at 9 o'clock. That's a stage show. I'll be doing that for a couple of hours and then run straight into the stadium, change into the suit, and then host the game for Sky Sports. So, yeah, fantastic week ahead.
You know what? Enjoy every second of it. And I got to find a way to get involved in that stuff because I want to be around you when you host one of those Regent Street deals because of Trafalgar Square deals because I've heard it is a great, great time.
They are. And the minute you, and I'm only going to say this quietly in case your bosses are listening, the minute you retire from coaching, me and you are hosting them together. I don't need to do them on my own. We can do them together and we'll have a lot of fun.
I think so too, man. I look forward to seeing you real soon. We got three more and then hopefully the playoffs and then I'll be over and, you know, when the games are the biggest, that's when we'll be doing them.
Good stuff. All right. I'll speak to you later in the week, Jeff.
All right, Neil. Take care, man.
All right. That's Jeff Reinbold. I've been Neil Reynolds and I've been well and truly lost, but I hope you enjoyed that podcast. This is Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We are sponsored by Sport Lobster. It's coffee. Find the venue, Community Day, and then Wembley Week. We hope you enjoy, and we'll be back to speak to you later in the week. Bye for now.